Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, how you doing?
Chris, I am doing great. I've been enjoying this summer, a week of vacation with my community up in North Carolina, and now I'm helping out with a family camp, Heart Ridge Camp in Sunset, South Carolina.
So we're both doing this remotely today. I am deep in the Adirondacks at Lake George, New York.
Beautiful.
One interesting thing about Lake George, many people don't know this, but it's the birthplace of the U.S. Navy.
Really? I'm sure there's a great story behind that.
Well, it's British and the Americans fought on Lake George. The northern part of Lake George connects to the southern part of Lake Champlain at Fort Ticonderoga. And so whoever controlled Fort Ticonderoga controlled both bodies of water. So it was the first naval battles for the U.S. during the Revolutionary War.
Fascinating. A little bit tidbit of history to start off today's program.
Yeah. Yeah. So
What else do you have for us today, Chris? You always have such great questions, and you like to put me on the spot. So what's on the docket for today?
We're going to start with Swift Justice in Sports, National Review article I read about Indiana Fever forward Sophie Cunningham. She clotheslined J.C. Sheldon of the Connecticut Sun to pay her back for the cheap shot she put on the Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark. You know who Caitlin Clark is?
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Iowa. How could I not know who Caitlin Clark is? She is the state hero of Iowa right now.
So there's tons of unwritten rules in sports, you know, like plunking the next batter in baseball when the opposing team's pitcher hits one of your guys.
Sure.
Within the confines of the boundaries of sport, do you think the Catholic Church should oppose what it would otherwise oppose in a normal everyday setting?
Unpack that a little bit for me.
There's all these different unwritten rules, and, you know, like in hockey, if you cheap shot somebody with a check into the boards, then it's understood that the tough guy for the other team is coming to get you either that game or the next opportunity. And the refs are going to let them fight it out, and they're not even going to probably, if it's known that there's a payback coming, probably not even going to put anybody in the penalty box. Mm-hmm. So this is a discussion of the difference between revenge and justice. So when you the church distinguishes between those two, and I would say that most of the unwritten rules of sports tend to be considered justice, not revenge. Mm-hmm. And I'd like your thoughts on exactly that. Let's say it's in hockey and your, star pretty boy gets checked into the boards. And the next game, the thug from the other team comes and, starts a fight with the guy that did the checking and to do it as a justice measure for what the other team did. What do you think the church's thoughts are on these retribution type things that serve as justice?
Well, I'll tell you what my thoughts are, and hopefully I'm reflecting what the church's insight would be on this. And I would put it in two categories. The first is that, within sports, everyone understands that you're playing a game. So you're within a specific context, and there are unwritten rules and written rules of a game, which allow for a certain degree of latitude. So I think it's important to allow a game to be played. I mean, none of us likes to see when a refs overcall a game or make it too tight. It just takes away kind of the spontaneity and the spirit of play in a game. So I think there's a certain degree of latitude for getting, sending a signal to someone. It crosses a line, though, if you're going to actually hurt someone else. I think that becomes a little bit problematic. If you want an insight onto this particular question, there's a great book that I came across a few years ago, written by an analyst from the Wall Street Journal, who's in charge of the whole sports section of the paper, and it's called The Captain Class, and he goes through and shows the greatest sports teams in the history of the world at least in the last 150 years. And what sets apart the great teams from the good teams or the mediocre teams is great captains. And then he goes into the seven behaviors that great captains exhibit. And one of them is kind of surprising, because the great captains always exhibit this particular quality of kind of going to the edge of the rules. They're not afraid to, you know, put in a little elbow to someone to do exactly what you're talking about, Chris, as far as like sending a signal like, hey, don't mess with my buddy. And that's what great captains do. So I think from a first standpoint, within the context of a game, if you're putting in a little extra ribbing or something like that to kind of send signals, I don't see a problem with that. There's a second vantage point that I would throw in here, Chris, and I think that is what's in the heart of the person. So if from a moral standpoint, you want to be building others up, acting like Christ, treating others with respect. So I think that any type of activity where you're actually hurting another player, or you're taking it outside of the context of the game, let's say that after the game, you know, a player starts a brawl out in a bar, I think that becomes very problematic, and it's a sign of lack of self-control. There was a great saying that they taught us in the seminary. It said that at table and at play, a man gives himself away. There's a real human insight into that, because watching how people eat, their attentiveness to others, how people play, how they're a gentleman or not, you learn a lot about a person and their character from watching a person as they eat and watching a person while they play.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the cheap shot that started it is where it becomes morally problematic, but I think the retribution is within the confines of the sport, absolutely the appropriate way to deal with things. You know, sports, especially like the Olympics, have historically kind of been the immoral equivalents of war, you know, capturing mm-hmm. war's intensity without the destruction.
Sure.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, these sort of micro mets of justice within them, I think, are all completely appropriate, and it's the right way to play.
Yeah, and humanly speaking, we need outlets for our energy so that it doesn't become bottled up, and repressed anger becomes usually an explosion afterwards. So channeling that in a somewhat measured form can be healthy, a healthy outlet.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. The practice of sports gambling has become legal in 39 states in the U.S. plus Washington, D.C. This has resulted in the rarely talked about but burgeoning cultural rot, particularly among young males, young men with a small amount of disposable income but not yet able to afford major life purchases, figure that essentially they could have much to gain while they don't have much to lose by betting on sports, even though they know the odds are stacked against them. The Catholic Church does not explicitly prohibit gambling, including sports gambling, but it does offer moral guidance that puts limits and conditions, for example, doing it in moderation and not cheating. I think young men in particular have a susceptibility to engage destructively in sports gambling due to a lack of temperance, which, you know, by nature is what young men have. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be able to send 18-year-olds off to war. So I'd like to hear, Father Daniel, you speak to this particular susceptibility of young men and a lack of temperance and how it's related to sports gambling.
That's a great question, Chris. I think we can all recognize that there are certain things where games of chance are perfectly fine. You know, playing bingo or playing penny poker, playing for, you know, low stakes Texas Hold'em game, really no problem with that. Even going to a casino now and then, knowing that, okay, I'm going to spend $50 and I know I'm going to end up at the end of the night, I'm going to be $50 out, but it's, you know, it's a night of entertainment. I think that all of that's no problem with that. And the church recognizes that. I actually had to write a paper on this when I was in studying moral theology in my licentiate degree in Rome. And it was very insightful for me because I knew that the catechism already said that, you know, games of chance were fine It's in, I just looked it up now as we were talking, and it's number 2413 from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It says that games of chance or wagers are not in themselves contrary to justice, but they become morally unacceptable when they deprive someone of what is necessary to provide for his needs and those of others. The passion for gambling risks becoming an enslavement. So this is where I think it becomes very problematic, because there is a certain percentage of the population that's always going to have a propensity to get addicted. And then they start, you know, wagering amounts that they can't afford. They start mortgaging their home. They start jeopardizing the livelihood of their family. That's where it becomes really problematic, Chris. And I think as I looked at this issue when I was in studying moral theology, you find that in communities where they set up gambling or casinos or, you know, even like sweepstakes and different things like that, there are a certain percentage of the population that just can't control themselves. And that's why you always see in the advertisements for casinos, it's like, if you have a gambling problem, call this number. They're required to do that by law. They wouldn't do it themselves. And they're required to do it by law because there's been so many people that get pulled into it. And what happens to the neighborhoods around these gambling establishments is that they tend to become depressed over time because there's so many people who lose their savings. And casinos always win. They're always going to come out on top, but they are long-term a severe detriment to society. Oftentimes, you know, when they're going to establish a lottery at the state, they tout all the benefits of, oh, it's going to benefit, you know, this and that. It's going to help with a public education. It's going to help with this other thing. Yeah, maybe on the short term, but the long-term detrimental effects of established gambling are very problematic.
Well, I think it's a little more nuanced too, that there is a certain segment of the population that's just genetically predisposed to be addicted to gambling, regardless of their age. Mm-hmm. But I think young men, you know, with or without that gene, are predisposed to, because of their lack of temperance, you mm-hmm. know, their brains aren't yet fully formed, and they're much more...
And less averse to risk as well, and they're just not thinking through all the consequences.
Right, and I just think that they're particularly susceptible to this, and I know that it's become this, like I said, cultural rot, particularly on college campuses, where
it really is. I'll tell you two quick stories about this, Chris. I was working with a young man a couple weeks ago, and he's off in his first job after college, making some money on his own, not married yet, starting to date seriously, but not really yet, and he did some of this online gambling. And ended up losing $20,000. And he called his dad. His dad's like, dude, you got to get your life in order. Don't you realize the consequences of this? And so, you know, this young man who didn't have $20,000 to lose, and now he's out that money, and he's got to, you know, rebuild for half a year or a year to make back that money. That's really negative.
Yeah, and these apps too, I don't know if you've seen them, they're literally, I mean, I thank God don't have these on my phone, because if I were 24 years old and had something like this, they're like video games, the sports betting apps. And it's so...
Well, it's a lot of fun for a young person, and they draw you in through the risk, the possibility of gain. You know, the second story, it's like that guy approached me about a year ago and said, Father, I was thinking of investing in this company, and they're doing this online gambling for sports. And he on his own decided, no, I really don't want to get into this. And he came back to me a few weeks ago and he said, Father, you know, I looked at the returns that these companies are having, and it is like huge multiples of what I could have made, but I would have had the moral qualms of knowing that I had stripped money away from people who couldn't afford it. So he was glad that he had.
Well, even more insidious is this notion now of spot fixing. There's a guy.
I'm not familiar with that. What's that mean?
Yeah, so Cleveland Guardians pitcher Louis Ortiz, he threw a slider in the dirt that was like 10 feet short of the plate and behind the batter, okay? And he had done something similar about 2 weeks earlier, and there's the ability now to bet on each pitch or each golf shot, you know, whether it's going to hit the green or not. I mean, you can micro bet everything now in sports, and so he's... There was a surge of betting activity before this particular pitch, just like there was with the one that happened 2 weeks before, and now he's under investigation facing a potential lifelong ban. But can you imagine now?
Wow.
This ability to bet on the next thing that happens and to do it across every single sport, how enticing and how destructive that is going to be or already is.
Yeah, and it undermines the integrity of the sport. That's been going on for centuries. There's nothing new under the sun, but the ways that we can do it now with the advent of AI and all these online platforms is really, truly remarkable.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. I read an op-ed about an op-ed from a Maine elementary school music teacher who published an article entitled, quote, "Certain topics spark parent pushback. I've decided to teach them anyway," unquote. This teacher named Marissa Armitage explains that she attended a Harvard University webinar series encouraging discussions on climate change, regardless of the teacher's assigned subject. And again, this is a music teacher at the elementary school level. She goes on to explain how she went further to tackle what she calls some of the harder topics, such as the real story, quote, "the real story of Thanksgiving and how it wasn't a harmonious collaboration between the settlers and the native communities, but rather an introduction of disease to unimmunize indigenous peoples and a taking of their land." So the guy who writes the op-ed about the op-ed, he is, you know, this is a negative take on what she's written. So he imagines what it would be like if the police were to stop you for speeding and then preach on the emergency of global warming, saying, you know, "Do you have any idea how much carbon you're emitting, sir, by going faster?" So from Hollywood actors to, you know, athletes to academia, it seems everyone with a, quote, platform is tempted to use it for something other than their stated job title. Actors and athletes are, you know, they're nothing more than entertainers. Yet they constantly seek to bend us to their worldview, which is overwhelmingly left-leaning. So why is that? Is there something about these particular professions where they have this platform that makes them susceptible to the sin of pride or the self-exaltation or what? What are your thoughts?
No, I think it's something that's inherent in human nature. If we believe something is true, you want to share that with others. If you think that you're morally, you've got a morally upright cause, you're going to try to convince others that it's the right thing to do. You know, whether
you're not
that's
going to have a cop stopping you asking you about carbon emissions, you know, even if he thinks that's morally the right thing to do.
Probably not. But anyone who's in a position, let's say like a pastor of a parish, you know, I've heard all kinds of horror stories of pastors at parishes who will preach about politics or talk about, you know, something that they're really not well informed on, that's not really in line necessarily with church teaching. And, you know, they'll catch flack for it. And it can create a backlash. So anyone who has a kind of a teaching platform, that be that a politician, a teacher, a pastor, a guidance counselor, their role is a little bit different than people who are in the service professions, like a cashier at a restaurant or a cop who's making a stop. So there's a different nature of businesses, and I think we've all had the positive experience of checking out at a store and someone, I say to the person, "God bless you," and they reply back, "Well, God bless you too, Father. Thank you." That's not inserting necessarily an opinion, but it's an inserting an aspect of your worldview. So in a certain sense, Chris, I understand where people are coming from if they're going to pontificate about their chosen cause. But I think there's a deeper question here. I mean, as a society, are we talking about the deeper questions of value, about what is truly good? So let's have a discussion about climate change. You know, what's the scientific data? Is it right? Is it wrong? But what happens a lot of times in our society right now is that people are just pontificating and they're taking up a cause and they're not really listening to anyone else. So it's just a one-way dialogue. And I think that's really problematic.
Yeah, I think that there's a susceptibility, though, for certain professions, because, you know, particularly in the arts, because you're kind of trying to unbound yourself with your expression, that you're susceptible to this rejection of traditional authority, and it leads to these types of behaviors where you're, like you say, pontificating about other things. I also think that probably anyone who is given this platform is susceptible to the, you know, the sins of vanity and pride, to think that, you know, I mean, that's what you and I
are doing. There's no doubt about that.
We're on a radio show, right, talking about certain things, and I have no, you know, I have no particular expertise in these things that I'm talking about. I'm merely bringing up questions that I am, that are piquing my interest as I read the news. But you, being a formed priest, have some particular expertise and some moral authority to speak about certain things. So, you know, it makes
definitely sense certain areas, and in other areas I'm ignorant. You know, I've got to recognize my own limitations and not exceed my, you know, the bounds of what I've studied and what I'm an expert in. And Chris, I think you're right. There is some professions that there's a tendency to go off the reservation. And that's particularly true right now in the education realm, because much of our education system in the United States has been somewhat radicalized and leftist leaning. And they feel like they're on a crusade to enlighten the rest of the dunces in the world who haven't yet come to their enlightenment.
Yeah, definitely. There's this pride and moral superiority that you sort of view yourself as compassionate by, you know, enlightening others. But I do think, so particularly actors who in almost all cases are doing what they're doing because they won the genetic lottery of looking good. I just find it, you know,
somewhat repugnant,
nauseating for either side of the political spectrum to hear what they have to say because, you know, they won the genetic lottery. I'm less inclined to be upset about people in, say, like singer-songwriters who might be inspired to write something that is moving because of their beliefs, whether they're, you know, beliefs that I believe in or not. I'm less, you know, I'm less nauseated by that. But particularly Hollywood actors, I just don't like. Why do you think anybody wants to know what you think?
Well, they're oftentimes used as pawns, so. They're people, actors, and if you've ever gotten to know any actors, they tend to be people who are wear their emotions on their sleeve, and they are very attuned to how other people perceive them. So oftentimes they're easily manipulated to be enlisted in a cause as a sort of a front or as a face for whatever issue or cause someone is trying to promote. So oftentimes what goes on behind the scenes is that they'll be coaxed into a position or given a commission to speak for a certain cause. And there's people behind the scenes who are using them as their face to get the message across, the face and the voice.
Yeah, well, in the case of this main music teacher teaching elementary school music, I can't think of any justification for coloring outside the lines and teaching people about, you know, how Thanksgiving is wrongfully celebrated.
Well, and I think you're touching on something that's a whole nother can of worms we could open up, Chris. I think this is one of the key reasons why we see such a strong movement of towards independent schools, private schools, and homeschooling within the country, because of this ideological bent that has that's taking place in much of our education system. Teachers who just feel like that they have they've got a cause that they've got to further, which isn't teaching music. And so they're neglecting the basics of education. And we've got kids who are going through 12 years of public schools and can't read or can't do basic seventh grade math by the time they graduate, because teachers oftentimes are neglecting. And I don't want to take away in any way, shape or form from the heroism of many, many great teachers out there. But unfortunately, the antics of a few can bring down the reputation of the rest and bring down a whole system.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Another whole segment of the population that we haven't talked about is this, are the sports figures, the athletes who...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right. LeBron James, I think, has an eighth grade education, but he is, of course, an expert in geopolitics that we should listen to. And Dennis Rodman, of course, is famously the reason why we're not at war with North Korea, because he negotiated that truce.
Sure.
So why are sports athletes... I don't know if sports athletes have always done this or if this is a recent thing. I think actors and maybe even teachers have always, people in academia have always, but I think it's a more recent thing for sports figures to have used this, quote, platform.
Not entirely. I was just reading recently a book on Nero, the ancient, emperor of Rome, and he referred to sports heroes of his time, which were the chariot drivers or the gladiators, and oftentimes they were used in political campaigns to throw support behind a particular politician and or to advocate a new policy. So it's not really a new thing. Anytime that there's someone who has a particular name or resonance in society, people are going to try to leverage them and get them to their cause. And oftentimes, they're unwitting pawns of things that are maybe not the best causes.
Well, certainly things have happened in the past, like Jackie Robinson. I mean, he had, his was related to his sport with him breaking through the color barrier in baseball. It was related to what he was doing in the sport. He wasn't then going on to tell you, whether or not you should be in favor of the Royals in England or not. It had nothing to do with baseball. His had particularly something to do with what he was doing.
Yeah, that's certainly always going to be better received if you're staying on message and on target with your field of expertise. To your point, Chris, it's good for everyone to stay in their lane, but also to recognize that we are sons and daughters of God who do have a conscience, and sometimes we do need to speak up on issues. We need to have the deeper conversations, too, about what is right, what is good, what's best for our society.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens. On AM 1160, The Quest.